Hey guys, this is your host Savannah here. Don't be alarmed, the theme song is still coming. I'm just jumping in with a little warning that my mic broke halfway through this episode. So it kind of sounds like I'm recording from outer space. I mean, you don't know that I wasn't. Hopefully this episode is still enjoyable for you guys. I try to speak as little as possible so it shouldn't bother you too much, but I just wanted to give you a little heads up. And not to worry, as you can hear, I replaced my mic and the audio quality is going to be a lot better from here on out. Other than that, enjoy this wonderful episode on Ed Kemper.
A scenario furry, okay? So I was listening to Jack May. He's a YouTuber and he has a podcast called Happy Hour.
Yeah.
And he gave a scenario to the boys and I want to give it to ye and see what ye
I'm
do.
I'm like weirdly nervous, okay.
It's slightly grim, but it's not bad, okay? Right?
Slightly grim for us is really grim
it's
for
really
everyone
bad.
Else. So.
Well, it does kind of involve some sort of genocide, so I suppose you're not wrong. Okay, so basically, you summon an evil genie. Or a djinn, whatever you want to call it, right? He comes and he summons five members of your family, like five of your closest members. It's up to you who those five members are, okay? He's going to shoot each of them in the head, but you can save them. But once you save them, 100,000 people die. Do you let your family be killed? Do you let some of your family be killed? Or are 500,000 people dying?
Can I ask?
Yes.
In what way are the 100,000 people being killed? Like, is it quick or is it like torture?
I think it depends on the genie's mood, to be honest.
Are they randomly selected 100,000
randomly
people?
Selected, yeah.
So we can't even be like, just get the neo-Nazis?
Yeah, no.
Fuck.
You can't take all the races out in one fell swoop, unfortunately.
Your chances of getting Trump are low, but never zero.
True.
Exactly.
Very true. But we were talking about this morning. This is not any way to lead it off topic, but if Trump does die, he will be martyred. So I want the cunt to live and suffer. We can't have him being made into a martyr. It's not happening. So I get to choose what family members.
Yeah, no, but they have to be your five closest family members. But like, just say if you were close to, like,
I don't even have that money.
Well, then it moves up. So just say, like, you go your mom, your siblings, and then Dave or one of us. They go in to make up the fight.
Okay. Ye are all I have, so sorry to them 100,000 people. Toodles.
So Savannah's committing mass genocide.
Oh, mass genocide AF.
Well, I'm not committing mass genocide. I'm just choosing between my family and 100,000 people. The fellas who's... The djinn, little genie fella, is the one who's killing them. So it's not really my fault. He's the one who
but
put
it's murder
me in this...
by proxy, isn't it?
Yeah, so you're going to have to live...
No, if someone's...
You're
going
to have to live with the thought that I killed 500,000 people as opposed to five.
Wait, when did we go from 100,000 to 500,000?
Because it's 100,000 per person.
Yeah.
Oh, per... Oh, right, okay. Yeah, no, sorry. <They're> still going.
I mean, after the first 1,000, like, it's all the same to me. Like,
is
I don't
it
know
really...
These
exactly. Is it really that bad like... when the Earth is severely overpopulated and we need to decrease anyway?
I mean, 500,000 is nothing in the grand scheme of things in general, even with depopulation in mind. So, realistically...
But morally, not even for the sake of the planet.
It's just morally.
500,000 potential murders on your head.
The whole point of being like a person with feelings is having people that you care about, isn't it? And doing
but
people you know. So I don't really give a fuck about 500,000 people. I don't know if my five best main people are all dying. I don't even
but
know
then,
who my top how do I even pick my top five like?
Well, it'd be your mom, your dad, your sister. So that's three. So then you can either pick like Radic or one of your cousins or whoever you're closest to. Yeah, one of us.
So what's the point of even being alive then?
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying. I literally have Mam, Adam and Emma. They're the only three people in my family that's left. Like, I don't even fucking really know
the rest of them. Morally, if it was like a case between five people I didn't know and 500,000 people I did know, obviously you're picking the five to
die. Well, obviously that's easy then, Quiva. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I'm going to be selfish and say fuck those 500,000.
My point is...
Oh my god.
You would let us die! You would let your mom, your dad and Craig and whoever the fuck will say it's me and Savannah.
I never said that, but I wouldn't go into it with an attitude like, fuck those 500,000 people.
No,
die, bitch.
You gotta own it. You can't. Like, you can't have doubt, because if you have doubt, it'll eat you alive for the rest of your life. You have to.
It's gonna eat you alive regardless. Like, you're telling me, right? Strong willed Queeve, if you can blur out her last name. You're gonna be absolutely cool, like, knowing that you've, like, had a hand in 500,000 people dying. You're like, okay, this is cool. Go play with your cats and your dogs, and you're never going to think about it or feel bad about it ever again.
I feel like this is going to
sound
bad,
right? You can
definitely
dissociate.
But yeah, I feel like it's the same concept as trying to understand, like, space, how big space is. Like, 500,000 people is, like, incomprehensible. I don't know these people. If it was, like, 10 people from town, like, that would be a harder decision for me. If it was 10 people, like 10 acquaintances versus my five top.
Like, do you reckon, now, I don't actually really believe this is how the pandemic started, but just for the sake of argument, because it's the only one we've been given as an answer to it. Do you reckon the one cunt who went bat soup in Wuhan and started this shit off feels bad about the million deaths that have occurred because of it?
Absolutely. Like, you'd have to.
I don't think he does. He's like, oh, well, shit happens.
But you can come.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but anyways, like,
this is what I'm saying. This is the one that we've been told. That's how it started. So we're like,
pretend that, yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
But, like,
nobody fucking buys it.
I couldn't live that. I'd straight up, like, self murder. Like, I couldn't.
See, I feel like I'd end up killing myself either way. So it's lose lose.
Ew, but then what about if you got a taste for it then?
See, I feel like I would. I think I am one nervous break away from being a fucking serial killer. So.
This
is a very bad thought.
This is, like,
for me,
a very, like, intense, like, Thanos snap. Like we all thought he was a cunt, so we shouldn't do it ourselves.
Except I didn't. I thought Thanos was right.
Oh my god.
Yeah,
goodness.
I thought he had a point.
I thought he,
like,
had a
he
serious
went to,
point.
And it's the same. It's the same as the. They all have a point. A good villain always has a good point. Where
yeah.
you're kind of like, given the right circumstances, I would be you.
Like, I'm not saying I would pick any of my family to die. Okay.
Yeah.
But you're after scaring me with how quick and how emotionless your answers were.
It's actually scaring me that you're kind of, like, questioning. I feel like it's a very normal thing to be like, I'm picking my people.
So then would you be able to ask said genie what the circumstances of the death would be? As in, would it be merciful for your family but not for the others? Because then in that case, I would sooner give my family a merciful death than not for
yeah.
anyone else, because then they're... Possibly
I'm going to say
death too.
You can ask, but then because
okay,
he's,
well, that would change things then.
But
yeah.
also you have to keep in mind
he's a fucking trickster.
He's an evil cunt, so what makes you think he's
yeah.
going to tell you the truth?
This is very true.
But, like, you could still keep three, so just say, like, if one of them was annoying you and you're like, do you know what?
No, that's fucking, that's harsh now. No, you pick one
is
or
it?
Other.
That's more harsh than killing 100,000 people?
Yeah. Personally.
I don't know.
Is there a loophole where I can just kill myself and nobody else?
No.
Man, fuck this. This is so much easier with the original thought experiment from philosophy, which is, you know, you've got the train. You've one person that you care about on the left track and two people you don't know on the right track. Do you switch the track to kill the
yes.
two, or do you save or leave the one die?
I would switch
it's
the track.
It's the many versus the few. I would switch the track too. And this is why I answered so quickly, because we
everyone
had to do
would.
That in college.
Like, most
so.
People would. Like, you can say you, like, morally, ethically, of course, you probably shouldn't. Mm. But people are selfish people. Like, and then after
we'll
that,
we just have
like,
to hope for the best that he targets the people that have made the pandemic worse by protesting their right not to wear a mask.
They deserve to get an
absolute
boot up the fucking hole. But if he's evil, would he not, like, think those people are, you know, like, destroying humanity more?
No,
so he'd
if
leave
he's a
them.
Dickhead, he's definitely picking, like, babies as well.
Kids are dying.
Like, what makes a baby better than an old person? Aside from the fact that they haven't lived their life, but a baby doesn't even know they haven't
well,
lived
that's,
their
that's
life.
Well, that's exactly
a baby.
It. It's,
but you're robbing it the opportunity
chance,
of having a life
yeah.
as opposed to the old person who's lived a long life.
I'd rather a baby. Well, I wouldn't rather a baby, Jesus. But, like, I mean.
just
advocating
awkward,
for child murder.
No, but I'm just saying, like, a baby doesn't even know what it's missing out on, you know? So. Pros and cons.
Yeah, but when you're older, you could die of a heart attack in the morning. I know anybody could
yeah.
die in the morning, but, like,
yes.
actively robbing.
The old people, like, their families are expecting them to pass within the next, say, 5 years, we'll say. Everyone, once you reach a certain age, you're preparing for that loss as,
yeah.
as the family of that person. Whereas you're, say, what? Say me and David have a baby in the morning. We're 24 and 25. and then our little 6-month-old baby just drops dead in front of us. I'm scarred for life, Cuiva. Think about what you're saying.
It is no way better. I'm not talking about like the family members around. Obviously, it's shit for everyone regardless. Everyone's going to have a shit time.
That's what I mean. It's more like you don't think about the person that dies because realistically, they're winning. Death is the prize. Life is the problem.
Oh my God. I regret even asking this question, right? Because one, I'm afraid of both of you right now. None of you will be godmother to my future kids. Obviously, I'm still going to pick my family, but for you just to think that you can disassociate so quickly, absolutely not. Both of you probably have depression. What the fuck makes you think that you can dissociate after
the
500,000 people?
That's where the dissociation comes in.
What do you mean probably? This has gone on for 17 and a half minutes. I'm going to have to try and cut that down to like 5. So shall we get on to someone who actively murdered people by pure intention and got great joy out of it and didn't dissociate well, actually tried to pretend he did, but still, not the point. Let's get on with some real murders, shall we? Without any further ado, let's dive in.
As you know, I'm sure, we're doing Ed, Eddie, and I got assigned Ed Kemper.
Assigned.
The best of all the Eds. I know, like,
well, yeah, that's
we're
what I was,
teachers,
like.
And we just gave you homework to do.
This is what you're
said,
doing.
We're
no
doing
questions
Ed,
asked.
Ed, Eddie, and these are the three Eds we're doing. Which one do you want to do?
And then, so that means you chose Ed Kemper.
Whatever there was, I was assigned. I'm using the word assigned because I want to, and I'm going to.
Well, you're grammatically incorrect, but continue anyway.
Cool. So, Edmund Emile Kemper the third.
So, excuse me.
Excuse the fuck out of both of you. He was born in Burbank, California on the 18th of December in 1948. He was the middle child and he was the only son, so he had an older sister and a younger sister. His parents were Clarinelle Elizabeth Kemper and Edmund Emile Kemper the second. So Mr. Ed, the big bitch that he is, big, literally.
Yeah.
He was fucking humongous. Yeah.
He's a huge bitch.
His older sister was Susan, and she was 5 years older than him. And he had a younger sister, Alan, and she was 3 years younger. I'm presuming I'm saying Alan right? A-L-L-Y-N. I thought it was unusual for a girl's name.
A-L-L-Y-N?
Yeah. Alan.
Like, or Aileen?
Could be Alwyn either.
Or Alwyn, yeah.
I'm going to say Alan. I'm just saying, if I'm saying it wrong, I'm sorry.
It's unimportant to the story anyway.
It's unimportant. It's just I noticed it when I was doing my notes. I was like, Alan is... It's an unusual girl's name. I actually quite like it, but it's just unusual. Edmund II, so Ed's dad, he was a World War II veteran. He tested nuclear weapons after the war in the Pacific Proving Grounds before he moved back to California where he worked as an electrician. Clarinelle, his wife, she complained and moaned at him about his menial electrical job.
Oh, fuck you, bitch.
Alright, bitch.
This
what
is
do you
a
work
trend
as?
That she will follow of being a massive bitch. Edmund apparently later said that suicide missions in wartime and atomic bomb testings were nothing compared to living with her. And that Clarinelle affected him more than 396 days and nights of fighting on the front line did. So,
I mean,
bad signs. Straight off the bat, like, she's obviously, like, to say that over a year in, like, on the front lines in World War II wasn't as bad as living with his fucking wife.
Is she the kind of person that we reserve the word thunder cunt for?
I think she definitely, most definitely is. We'll see later on.
She, at the start, she kind of seemed like she's very
deserving
of the title.
Like, real bad.
They had Ed, obviously, and he was humongous. He was 13 pounds as a newborn.
Jesus! Imagine pushing that out.
No wonder she hated him. He would have shredded her fanny on the way out.
Oh, she's getting stitches for sure. Like, she's ripped from, like, like vag to ass. There's no way she wasn't.
He apparently was a head taller than, like, all his friends. Like, all other four-year-olds, he was a head taller than them by the age of four. So he was a big boy, like. Apparently, like, very early on, he had, like, you know, that the stereotypical antisocial behaviour. You know, he was cruel to animals. When he was 10 years old, he buried a pet cat alive. Once it died, he dug it up, decapitated it, and mounted its head in a spike. He
that's
said,
fucking that's, excessive, Ed.
That's already the time to just put him down like a sick cow. Like, why are these people allowed to continue?
That's a time for Insta, or what's it called?
Institutionalization.
Yes, thank you. My brain just went to say it, and I don't know how.
I said that in one go.
I'm proud of you.
Small claps.
Clicks.
You're like Dumbledore.
Yeah.
And he said later on, I'm presuming after everything kind of went down, that he actually derived pleasure from successfully lying to his family about killing the cat. So obviously they were wondering what the fuck happened to it. And they asked him, obviously they'd be like, does anyone know what happened? And he was like, he really enjoyed deceiving them and lying about what had happened. At the age of 13, so 3 years later, he killed another family cat because he felt that it preferred his younger sister, Alan, over him.
He probably sensed the bad vibes, you fucking weirdo.
Animals know when you're
The cat fucking doesn't like you because you're obviously bad fucking vibes. But anyways, like, cats know, like, the animals know when something is weird. Like, they know when there's an anger there. He apparently kept pieces of this cat in his closet until his mother found them.
I'm assuming she only found them because they started stinking.
Yeah.
I would assume so, or she was putting away clothes or something like that, you know what I mean? She seems like the kind of mother who would be, like, going through their stuff when they were at school and that kind of thing, so...
Oh, yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah.
You know, either or, like, but anyways, I don't know. He apparently had, like, a real dark, like, fantasy kind of thing going on, where he used to take his, you know, Alan's dolls and, like, performed rituals with them. Resulted
are
in
we
him.
Talking like satanic or sexual or
well he cut off their hands Catholic? And heads so
right
yeah so Fred we can presume that there he's living out a fantasy of it just along with the cat I would say it's very normal to kind of like mess with dolls, you know.
Yeah, he's already got like a whole but with the cat already,
the cats give it just a whole other vibe. I keep saying vibe, I don't know why.
Yeah.
It gives it a whole other like feel to it than a normal kid just experimenting with dolls. Apparently his older sister Susan, by the way, bitch as well. Anyways, she started picking on him and was teasing him and asked him why he didn't try to kiss his teacher, his second grade teacher. He apparently had a thing for her. And she asked him why he wouldn't like try and kiss her. And he said, if I kiss her, I'll have to kill her first.
I'm not being a bitch, but also I am being a bitch because I would bully the fuck out of him as well.
No, like...
Sorry, no.
Hold your judgment for a minute. Just for a minute.
Okay, I'll hold it off.
You're so right. I would have bullied the fuck out of him too, but... just a minute. He said that apparently when he was a young boy, so second grade, so what's that? That's like second class, so of making your communion, you're 8 years old. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they match up like that. So like 6th grade is 6th class and then they go to 7th grade, which is first year. Yeah, so he said that he would sneak out of his house and with his father's bayonet, he would go to his 2nd grade teacher's house and watch her through the windows.
Huh?
Yeah, so he stalked her, basically.
At 7?
At 7 or 8, yeah.
He needs to be put down, I'm sorry.
There's no way of rationalising what he's done, like there's no way. But anyways... I feel like he was just neglected. Like I'd say,
but with Carnell, with
she just didn't like him. Like her,
yeah,
the dad,
the
because he obviously had these really dark, aggressive fantasies about beating women.
But like,
At the age of 8 or 9 or whatever the fuck, to say that like I'd have to kill a girl before I can kiss her. Like, why? Where the fuck did he get that idea?
This is where shitty parenting comes in. Because if he had any way of a better parent, he would be immediately put in some sort of asylum.
He was obviously neglected and obviously the darkness was probably showing through, which to me, I feel like you probably would neglect a child like that because you'd be nearly scared of him. On top of the fact that Clarnell was a fucking raging bitch. You know, it didn't bode well for him anyways.
I'd say she was the 40s, case
putting him in a fucking pillowcase and shoving him in the river.
Like... I feel like he's definitely one of those people that was born with this in him.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
She made him worse.
She could have been afraid of him. I doubt that's very much the case.
No, she just didn't give a shit.
I feel like I feel like with a different family, he might have been able to grow out of this kind of thing. But with...
I feel like you said, if he's born with... It was set out what he was going to do.
With a different family, he would have been locked away forever where he couldn't harm anyone.
Yeah, I don't know. But I feel like...
There was no fixing him. He's a psycho from birth.
That's a whole other...
Weaver, stop trying to see the fucking good in everyone. Some people
No,
are
I'm
just
not,
shitty.
But I'm just saying, like, it's just, I feel like with the really bad parents and awful mothers, that it tends to be a trend that it, like, creates. And maybe it's the fact that she's passed on whatever is in her. Do you know? I don't know. I just feel like it's definitely has something to do with her as well. But we won't victim blame.
Well, obviously, like, she would have, like, aggravated it to a point if she was that horrible and he couldn't stand her. But the point, I think, that we're trying to make is that
it would have happened anyways.
Like, it's
yeah.
not like he was doing it in his teens where that could have might, you know, you see a lot yeah. of that, like...
You don't decapitate a cat at 4 if you...
Or stalk somebody with a knife at 7.
Or 7, yeah.
When you're too young to understand what, essentially, that you're doing... Whereas a teenager, yeah. you know, you would have heard stuff, you would have been talking to other kids, you would have been reading or watching stuff at that age, yeah. you're not yeah. going to. So and if that was like, pre-wired in you to do.
Yeah. yeah. Puberty is usually the worst time for serial killers when they're sort of a nurture case rather than a nature case. Yeah. As in, like, their background kind of broke something in them and made whatever was kind of underlying come out fully.
Yeah, he was
but
very
this
young.
This guy is like, it's from get the get-go. This is nature AF. His brain was already broken when he sprung out of the womb.
Yeah.
As a humongous fucking giant baby.
As a giant baby.
Literally.
So anyways, in later on, you know, after whatever, he said that as a kid, his favourite games to play with his sisters were gas chamber and electric chair. So he used to get Alan to tie him up. And she flipped.
Just pause.
Let me describe the game
just
first.
Trying to skip over the chamber and
an attempted Holocaust and electric chair. Like
I'm not. I'm about to describe how we used to play the game. So he used to get Alan to tie him up and sit him in a chair, and then she'd flip an imaginary switch, and then he'd fall out of the chair and wriggle around on the floor, pretending that he's being executed by. You know, that he was being electrocuted or mm-hmm. that he was having, like, nerve damage from being suffocated mm-hmm. with the gas.
So he was the one that was getting gassed or electrocuted, which yeah. is interesting.
Yeah, that's what I was like.
Like, having a death fantasy himself at that age mm-hmm. is
yeah.
weird.
For himself, like, not even just, like, enjoying yeah. the idea of death, like, he wanted to be the dead person.
It's which puts sound a whole... very bad, but if you just would have thought a little harder and actually came through with it.
Couldn't have played a game of, oh, look, hangman and noose, no.
Or, oh, that's a big train, let me slip on the tracks. Many alive would have been saved, but look.
Yeah.
Here we are. So, as we said, Susan comes back into the story and acted the fucking bitch, basically. He had a couple of near-death experiences because of her. Where she actually tried to push him in front of a train.
See, Susan fucking knew. I'm sorry. Susan was
Susan
onto something.
Susan is not
she
the
was
bitch.
Like, this little cunt.
She just wasn't successful.
Yes. Another time she actually pushed him into the deep end of a swimming pool and he nearly drowned. So, I mean, I'm not saying this lad was obviously evil and she obviously fucking hated him because of probably, they all knew he was killing fucking cats, right?
Yeah.
It's still, you still wouldn't try and kill someone like that at that age. Like, she was 5 years older than him. Do you know what I mean? It's very...
Adam's 5 years older than me, and once he held a pillow over my face until I nearly died, he also threw me off of rooftops. Kids are just shitty.
Okay.
I mean, to my knowledge, Adam has never killed any cats or anything, so...
It's like, well, that's another thing we'll have to worry about in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... I feel like there was definitely some weird darkness like running through the family, and whether or not it was like Clarnell's genes and that it was like a genetic thing where they just had like zero fucking empathy. But I feel like there was an undertone of something wasn't right.
I could see her being more vigilante than serial killer, like, for sure.
I
don't know. Like,
she wasn't
like...
doing anything to Aline, was she? Or Alan or whatever.
Not that it's mentioned. No.
No. Well then.
Yeah,
I think she just knew that Ed was a bad egg and she was trying to crack it.
Yeah, she just didn't have enough passion for it because otherwise she would have been successful.
Because if it was the other way around, it would have been a success. This is the problem. God damn it. No, I'm sorry. I'm on Susan's side.
Okay, fair enough. Ed, as he was growing up, had a close relationship with his dad. And when his parents separated in 1957, he was devastated because he felt like his dad was... Most likely his lifeline live in the house when he was living with his mom because as we know. So anyways, he ended up being raised by Clarnell in Helena in Montana. He obviously, as you can imagine, had like a really bad relationship with his mom.
Mm-hmm.
She apparently was a neurotic, domineering alcoholic who frequently belittled, humiliated and abused him. Clarnell starts saying things that make sense when she often made her son sleep in a locked basement because she was afraid he would harm his sisters. So, I mean...
Still on Team Sue.
Yeah. And Ned is starting to lean towards maybe Clarnell also knew that little psycho is what popped out of her.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to control that. I mean, I'm not saying it's the right way.
And you should never lock kids in a basement or attic, no matter how mentally ill they may be.
But I could see her point.
Yay.
In this instance, I can see her point.
Mm. Yeah.
So, yeah. Ed was down in the basement because she was afraid he would harm, like, the sisters. She apparently also regularly, like made a laugh of him because of his size. He was apparently 6'4" by the age of 15. And he was, like a stocky guy as well. Like, he wasn't, like, slim. You know, like, when young lads are tall, they tend to be, like, stretched looking.
Yeah.
He chunked up at the same time, so he was a big lad.
A monster.
She called him, and I quote, a real weirdo.
She's not wrong.
She turns wrong. She starts being wrong again. When she refused to show him affection out of fear that she would turn him gay.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
So, I mean, this is what really made me think that maybe she did have a bigger effect on him than you would think. Because, like, if she was treating him, like, at keeping him at arm's length, like, since he was a baby, like, I feel like that would... It would fuck you up. She also told him, when he was young, that he reminded her of his father and that no one would ever love him.
I mean... If you're taking the heads off of cats and stalking women when you're a child, I feel like she's right.
But it wasn't because he was killing cats. It was because he reminded her of his dad.
Oh, no, I know that. But I mean, she wasn't wrong in her guess. Even if it is, like, not got to do with how much he looked like his father. It's because of that, that crack brain that he has.
But fairness, she's been a bit of a fucking cunt bag there, to be honest. Because she managed to like his father well enough to climb up on top of him to make 3 children.
I mean...
So
she's just a bitch.
Or under him.
You're not
I
wrong.
I don't know how they did it. Not my business. But I imagine it was under. I just can't see Clarnell being the type to make an effort.
No, it wasn't spontaneous at all. It was just like,
no,
let's have kids. That was it. Lie there like a starfish. Yeah.
And I feel like that's why they definitely had like the 3. I know this is complete speculation on my part, but like they had a girl and I feel like she wanted girls. That when she had Ed, she was like, I need a girl. That she didn't want
a boy.
At all. That's just the feeling I get from it because, I don't know, I feel like he was definitely neglected by her because she, first of all, didn't want to turn him gay, which doesn't make sense.
No.
Because would female affection not make you...
I think they'd see it as he'd be more effeminate and by being more effeminate, he'd be more womanly.
Men don't have emotions. Yeah. Men are just men and they're dirty and they drink beer and they smack each other on the back, but you don't hug me.
Yeah.
It's gay.
Ugh, like, it's a fucking child. We won't get into the nuance. Anyways.
Flawed logic. Onwards.
So, Ed described her as a sick, angry woman. It's been kind of... The word is postulated. So, I'm going to say assumed, like... People have, like, guessed that she had borderline personality disorder. Obviously, you can't diagnose someone from the past, but she seems to have, like, all the symptoms and, like, all the behaviour patterns of someone who does have that disorder.
Yeah.
So, anyways, at the age of 14, Ed had enough and he decided to run away from home. So, he left his mother's house and he went to look for his dad. So, he went to Van Nuys. He went to California. Van Nuys. So he went to California.
He went to California and from California because he was in Burbank.
He moved around in California for a while. Until he found his dad. And when he found his dad, once he got to him, he found that his dad had remarried and had a stepson.
Mm-hmm. Jealousy.
So Ed stayed with his dad for a short while, but then he was sent back to his mom and his sisters in Montana. He wasn't in California, he was in Montana.
Oh, I forgot that he moved. He was just born in Burbank, California. Never mind.
Yeah. Anyways, regardless.
Come to CESPO for the most accurate information ever.
He was sent back to... He was sent back to Montana due to his stepmother. His stepmother apparently started suffering from stress from trying to deal with him. There's no real set details as to what he was doing, but there's a few, like, apparentlys, you know.
Just being him fucking self, to be honest. That'd stress you out enough.
Like, so, apparently, he skulked around the house, so just like stalked around the place like being fucking weird and shady and creepy, and stared at her until she became upset.
Imagine a child staring at you so much that you cry.
She actually began to get migraine headaches from the stress of the whole thing, and one time he happened to catch a glimpse of her naked in the bedroom that she was obviously getting changed.
Okay,
after
I don't even think it happened to catch a glance.
No,
Stalky was like looking through the peephole waiting to see a bit of titty.
He finally caught a glance of her naked. Fucking begging for a nip slip for weeks.
Honestly, God. No wonder she was crying and having a breakdown. Like, this child would not leave her alone. Do you know what? If he was alive, well, I know he is alive today, but I mean, like, you know, if timelines were fast forwarded, he'd be one of those creeps that would put cameras in public toilets.
Oh, yes.
Definitely. Bowls, just so he could have a... We know.
Oh, 100%. 14-year-old Ed Kemper would be a GameStop customer, and that is a fact.
100%. Anyways, after he saw her naked in the bathroom, he later on, when he was like remembering, he said that he felt sexually excited by the episode.
Yeah, because he got a glimpse of a glimpse.
So
of
he
a
got
titty.
A stiffy. Yeah, is that like?
Yeah, which is fine. It's a normal, like, you like. You know, I'm presuming she was a pretty girl. Well, woman. He was a young lad. It's normal, but...
Yeah.
Later on, though, the whole situation would be reinterpreted by the media. Oh. He kind of encouraged it, but the journalists kind of reinterpreted it like a sexual kind of... Like, she was trying to come on to him, basically.
Right. That she had... So that she, like, deliberately put herself out there naked for him to
the
see.
The quote is, the woman had appeared naked before him, using her sexuality to take his father from him. What? So we love misogyny. Yeah.
Wait.
So she was getting changed in her bedroom. He happened to see her. Whether he intentionally was looking in, or whether he walked past and the door was cracked, we won't speculate. We don't know. But how is that her fucking fault?
Yeah.
We do. And how, you know what I mean?
How is her... Let's for a wild minute pretend she deliberately got naked in front of it. She didn't. Fucking state of him. Why would you? But say she did. How is that taking the father away from him?
Yeah, that doesn't
In what
make sense.
Sense do those two things correlate?
They don't.
Because Ed wasn't even with him when she got with him. When she got with the father, like.
Bumblebutt was in Montana.
Like, there was no competition whatsoever.
No. There's no correlation between any of those things.
No.
It reminded me of, I don't know if you've seen it, but like, you know all those like 1950s like psychiatric hospital interviews on YouTube?
I love watching them.
No, there was one, I swear to God, the actual, I was so thick. It was 1960s psychiatric interview, hysterical personality is the title, right? This woman was just talking about, like, she was labelled hysteric when she very clearly was, like, sexually abused as a child and, like, was coming to terms with it. So she was talking to this man, you know, explaining what had happened, like, obviously a psychiatrist, normal.
Yeah.
One of the quotes in your man's notes is, her attitude toward the interviewer has a seductive, controlling quality. And when I say this woman was sitting on a couch just listening to him and like telling him her story, and he was saying that she was controlling because she was like, I get anxiety if people are like looking at me silent. So like if there was a lull in conversation, she would get quite anxious. So she was like, you know, it's your turn to say something. I've said what I need to say. And yeah. He said that she was being like, she was trying to control the conversation. And it just reminded me of that because I was like, you've completely twisted this into a case where the woman is the one who's like making it sexual when you're the one who found her good looking. He just thought she was good looking and he made it her fault.
She smiled at me, she talked to me, so that means she wants me.
Exactly. And all because there's nothing more sexually seductive than childhood sexual abuse.
And riddled with anxiety. Oh.
Like,
oh, it makes me nervous when you leer at me, she said seductively. What is this, a fucking Stephanie Meyer book?
Honestly.
Like, she literally said, like, listen, I get stressed, basically, that when there's, like, a silence, extended silence.
Yeah.
And it just gives me the same fucking, I thought of that interview straight away when I saw it.
Because no, definitely.
Watched the whole interview through and then read the description and I was like, in what fucking way?
Yeah.
Was that any of that? Yeah. I was like, you just thought she was good looking and that's her fault, you fucking dickhead.
Yeah.
So Ed has been sent back to his mother, right? And then a few months later, Thanksgiving rolled around and he ran away from home again and he went back to California. Another incident had him following his pregnant stepmother around the house, closing all the drapes and blinds, claiming it was too bright. She got fucking scared, obviously, and she opened them all back up again and told him that he needed to leave. But her son, so, you know, his stepbrother, Gilbert is his name, by the way, I don't think I told you.
What? Gilbert?
Yeah.
Love it.
He happened to arrive home at that same time, and he noticed, like, he obviously saw his mom was freaked and, like, was how scared she was and that how creepy Ed was being. So he picked up a hammer and chased him.
Good man, Gilbert.
So Ed...
Go on, Gilbert.
Yeah. Obviously, Ed clearly didn't want to be living with his mother, and he couldn't live with his dad anymore because he was being a fucking weirdo. So like, was sending him down to live with, like, his paternal grandparents, so his dad parents. Mm-hmm. So he moved down to them for good at the end of, like, 1963. What actually happened was his dad brought him to the ranch in the mountains in North Fork in California. So they went there for Christmas and the dad went home without him after the holidays, basically. And he was like, you live here now.
It's the only way they would have gotten that to work, I think.
Yeah,
so
yeah. You're not walking home from the mountains.
No.
No. So,
and they would have been like, Ed, do you want to go up there? He would have been like, no, fuck you. I want to stalk your pregnant wife.
Yeah.
So yeah. Like, there was no, like, it had to be done. But I feel, So Ed obviously hated living in North Fork. He described his grandfather as senile and said that his grandmother was constantly emasculating him and his grandfather.
I love how every single woman in his life was either emasculating or they were trying to kill him. They were trying to put him down. They were constantly at him. Don't believe it for a fucking second.
Not at all. There's nothing, not like, he's only talking shit. Like, he...
Anything to justify what he did. That's all it was.
That's literally what it is. He was just looking for an excuse. You know what I mean? It's just... So before he moved to North Fork to his grandparents, he had actually started learning about firearms, presuming off his dad. But his grandparents actually took his rifle off him because he killed a few birds and other, like, small animals. So I'm presuming, like, squirrels and chipmunks and shit. And rabbits and stuff, which is, you know, they obviously didn't like that because it's weird, you know. Mm-hmm. To be killing small animals like that, it's not really done. So Ed was unhappy about this. So on August 27th in 1964, so nearly a year after he was left there, Ed was 15 and he was sitting at the kitchen table with his grandmother when they had an argument. Ed, like, flew into a rage and he stormed off and found a rifle that his grandfather had given him for hunting. He then came back into the kitchen and shot his grandmother in the head before shooting her twice more into the back. So he killed her.
At 15, like, we knew we always had it in him anyway, but still, like...
Yeah, it is still very early to escalate to... straight murder that quick.
Some accounts of the whole situation say that she actually suffered from, like, multiple post-mortem stab wounds from a kitchen knife.
That was a rage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyways, Ed's grandfather comes back and he comes home. He was off grocery shopping. He comes home. Ed goes out and met him in the driveway and shot him. Ed then was, like, obviously unsure of what to do because he didn't, you know, he's 15. He didn't know what to do after he killed two people.
That
so he rang his mom.
Caring for him.
Yeah, he rang his mom and he was like, I don't know what to do. And she was like, call the police. So ring the local police. So Ed called them and he just waited at the house for them to come and arrest him. After his arrest, he said that he just wanted to see what it felt like to kill grandma and said that he killed his grandfather to protect him from finding out that his wife was dead.
See, I don't believe that for a second. Like, if he wanted to see what it was like to kill his granny, you do it quickly. You don't shoot her various amount of times and then stab her body after it. She's dead at that point. So
he would have had a better defense if he just said he got really angry, like.
He went berserker on it.
He said he killed his granddad because he was afraid the shock of finding out that his wife was dead would give him a heart attack.
So he killed him to stop him from dying. Is that...
please. Please, I can't. I swear to God, I can't.
We're just going to skip over that because there's going to be so much more.
He's not going to get a fright seeing his dead wife on the ground. And he's also not going to get a fright seeing your monstrous grandson pointing a rifle at you. Yeah.
Well, Granddad.
Fucking goddess of Christ.
Oh, this fucking dude.
I can't. I really can't. A psychiatrist, Donald Lund, he interviewed Ed in his adulthood, and he said that in a way, Ed had used his grandparents as a way of, like, avenging the rejection he had experienced from his father and his mother. The grammar in that sentence was atrocious. I don't know how he said that. Basically, he was, like, he felt rejected by his parents, and he got revenge on them by killing his grandparents. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Obviously, at the age of 15, Ed had committed, like, horrific crimes. And people just couldn't understand how a 15-year-old could commit them. So court psychiatrist diagnosed him as a paranoid schizophrenic, and he was sent to Atascadero State Hospital, which was a maximum security facility that housed mentally ill convicts. So it was, you know, people who were criminally insane, basically.
Yeah.
While he was there, the California Youth Authority psychiatrists and social workers disagreed with the court psychiatrist's diagnoses. Their report said that Ed showed no flight of ideas, no interference with thought, no expression of delusions or hallucinations, and no evidence of its bizarre thinking. They also said that he was intelligent and introspective, and he had an IQ originally of 136, which is quite high.
Very intelligent. Very intelligent.
Isn't that like Einstein level?
Yeah.
They basically were saying that he wasn't, and there was nothing wrong with him mentally, that he knew what he had done. He was able to, like, self-reflect, all that kind of stuff, that, like, what they had diagnosed him as, people who have that, like, diagnosis, they can't do all of that stuff. So he was re-diagnosed with a less severe condition, which was a personality trait disturbance, a passive-aggressive type.
Passive-aggressive?
Yeah. I noticed
that. You mean full-on fucking aggressive?
Like, full-on 100%
aggressive. Yeah, I think murder surpasses passive-aggression. That's just...
aggression.
Murder.
That's just aggression. He was then given another IQ test, which he got the result of 145 out of that one. This man was a fucking genius. Like, it's obviously...
he is smart.
Like, your IQ is more a case of, like, your innate intelligence. He didn't seem like that smart of a guy, like, in common sense-wise, but it's a very much, like, a, you know, the ability.
Isn't it a thing, though, as well? No, I could be very, very, very wrong. But the higher your IQ, it's more likely that you're a psychopath. Because I think it's like after like all the psychopaths that they've tested or whatever, or ones that they know are psychopaths, they've all had a crazy high IQ.
Yeah, I think as well though that comes into the whole like the more intelligent people, like realists, tend to have like a much higher depression rate and stuff like that. Like, I feel like it's how you see the world kind of really affects like your intelligence obviously affects how you see the world, so it makes sense that sometimes it means that you see it in a bad way.
Yeah,
if that makes any sense. I don't know what I'm even trying to say, but
well, yeah, you see life the way it actually is, pretty much. You're more aware of problems and things around you, and you're able to look into these things, whereas people with a lower IQ are literally blissfully unaware. They don't think about these things.
I feel like
thinkers are the ones that have depression.
When Ed was inside in his little mental institution prison place, he endeared himself to his psychiatrist because he was a model prisoner. He actually was trained to administer psychiatric tests to other inmates, and one of his psychiatrists later said that he was a very good worker, and this is not typical of a sociopath. He really took pride in his work.
I feel like that has since been disproven, considering it in the say like of like high ranking CEOs are either sociopaths or psychopaths. So for them to say that, it just doesn't make sense.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think you have to have a certain, like, to get to where some of those high-ranking CEOs and stuff are, you have to step on the necks of a lot of fucking people.
You have to have a sense of, like, grandeur, like...
tenacity.
A feeling of, like, yeah. I am better than these
people. An inflated ego AF.
I'm going to do what I want. And I feel like he did have that. He just hit it well. Simple as, like, and he probably did take pride.
He just wanted to be better than everyone else and be smarter than everyone else.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, man was great at playing Holocaust, I think. Pretending that he's a bit of a normie is fine. Like, he's well able to crack that.
Yeah. He also became a member of the Junior Chamber of Commerce, which they call the JCs. I'm presuming like JC.
JC.
He, during his trial, he had like a pin, you know, that members got.
Yeah.
So like a little pin that you could, you know, pin on your clothes. And he wore that during his trial. And like, he he was really proud of himself that he had, like,
I suppose. Which just makes me, like, dislike him even more. Like, ooh, I'm so proud of my shitty enamel pen. People are going to see me differently because of it.
That's exactly it. That's what he wanted to be seen as. It was like, oh, this guy couldn't be that bad. Look at all the good he does. Look at his pin. He's such a great member of society. Look at him functioning. That was a fucking play. That was not for any reason other than this is going to make me look good.
Like,
I hate him.
While he was there, as you know, he was given tests to other prisoners, blah, blah, blah. But while he was there, he actually developed some tests as well. So he developed some new tests and new scales on the Minnesota Multifacet Personality Inventory. All those words were hard to say. Specifically, an overt hostility scale during his work with the psychiatrist. After his second arrest, Ed said that actually being able to understand how these tests functioned allowed him to manipulate his psychiatrist, and he admitted that he'd learned a lot from the sex offenders to whom he had administered these tests. For example, they told him that it was best to kill a woman after he raped her to avoid leaving witnesses. So he was getting little...
I was going to say, sex offenders aren't like your top tier of teachers that you should be aspiring to learn from.
I mean, like tips and tricks. Like they know, like they're passing on little tips on how to...
I get what you mean, but I'm saying that should never have happened.
No, you shouldn't be, like, prisoners shouldn't be allowed to fucking confer like that, and to be allowed to, like, pass on
huge
little tidbits.
Malpractice, like...
On his 21st birthday, so December 18th, 1969, he was released on parole from Atascadero. Against the recommendations of the psychiatrist at the hospital, he went to live with his mother. She had actually remarried and divorced in the time that he had been locked up, and she had taken on the name Strandberg. She was living in Santa Cruz in California. After he was released, he was able to kind of pretend. We're going to say pretend because he wasn't fucking rehabilitated. He was pretending that he had been successfully. I can't talk today, guys. I used it all up on that one word that I said really good. What was that word?
I didn't even fucking cop that you said that hour space.
What was that one word that I said really good? I said one word really good at the start.
Oh, institutionalized.
Yeah, I used all up.
It will, to be fair.
I can't. Powerful, like. I'm really bad. He managed to show/pretend his psychiatrist that he had been rehabilitated. And on the 29th of November in 1972, so 3 years after he'd been released, his juvenile records were permanently, like, cleared. So I really don't know what to say about that, because I feel like... You killed two people in cold fucking blood. You murdered multiple cats, and you have been diagnosed as... What was he diagnosed as? A paranoid schizophrenic or something?
Yeah, but then, like, that was cancelled out. And then he had, what was it, slight issues with, like, passive aggressiveness. Like,
sorry.
That.
The last report, like, on his records was from his probation psychiatrist. And it said, if I were to see this patient without having any history available or getting any history from him, I would think that we're dealing with a very well-adjusted young man who had initiative, intelligence, and who was free of any psychiatric illnesses. It's my opinion that he has made a very excellent response to the years of treatment and rehabilitation, and I would see no psychiatric reason to consider him to be of any danger to himself or any member of society. And since it may allow him more freedom as an adult to develop his potential, I would consider it reasonable to have a permanent expunction of his juvenile records. So his psychiatrist said that this guy is perfectly fine. Like, he responded really well to his treatment, that he deserves to be able to have 100% of fresh start.
Well, I'm not being funny, yeah? But they're obviously going to be of that opinion, because if he's creating new tests and other shit for them, like, they're going to think he's the bee's knees. Like, they're like, oh, he's so intelligent. Obviously, he's not going to be a harm to anybody. That was just a phase.
They obviously had different, like, definitions of what, like, sociopaths were and weren't capable of. So he wasn't showing...
Yeah.
He wasn't showing the signs that they would have considered sociopathy. So while staying with his mother, against every single recommendation by the psychiatrist, by the way, because they said that she, you know, obviously wasn't good for his mental health, Ed attended community college he had to attend community college in accordance with his parole requirements. And
yeah, you had to do it.
Yeah, after that he'd hoped that he would become a police officer, but was rejected. Not because he killed people. Not because he had decapitated cats.
No, sure, the cops do that. Why would they reject him for
but
something?
But because
he
was
like
too
that?
Big.
What?
He was too tall.
Wait, what? He was too tall? Yeah. Did they just not have a uniform to fit him?
He apparently, I'm going to be fucking for real right now, this man was humongous. He was 6'9" and over 20 stone.
He's a huge man.
Huge man. Like, he was a big...
Like, I know he was a big boy, but I don't see how that's a
deciding factor. I presume it's the whole thing
factor.
Of...
Like, would they rather them all be built like Danny DeVito as opposed to Arnold?
No, he'd be too short for
them. Like the film twins.
I presume it's probably like, as in,
imagine a little like army of Danny DeVito's coming in.
I don't know why you wouldn't be allowed. Like, what does height have to do with anything? But, so yeah, not because he'd been diagnosed with like multiple serious health issues, mental health issues, not because he'd killed his grandparents, not because he'd murdered multiple cats, but he was too tall.
They did say, honest God, they probably knew he was a freak as well and just used that as an excuse. Like, oh, you're sorry, you're actually too tall for the forest. Not that your height itself and weight would ever, ever intimidate.
There's definitely a reason. There's definitely a reason for it. Like, whatever it is, it could be like the way that it's like harder to access like areas or something because you're so big that it's hard to get into.
Then why did they allow fat cops on the force that can't run without having a risk of a heart attack?
Always be scared of the tall, tall man.
He ended up getting the nickname of Big Ed. And if you have been on the internet at all in the last few months, you will know that we have a 2020 Big Ed. And he is a very short necklace man.
Oh my God, the no-neck fella that puts mayonnaise in his hair.
The guy who's
my best view.
So despite being rejected from being on the force, whatever, in Santa Cruz, Ed managed to actually keep in contact with some of the police officers. He obviously, I don't know how he made friends with them, but he probably made the effort to stay in contact with police because, you know why, makes sense. He's kind of a dodgy guy, and I'd say he kind of knew it would be good to have people on side that had power.
Keep your friends close and your enemies closer and the cops even closer when you want to be a serial killer.
Yeah. I mean, the logic isn't flawed because it fucking worked.
Yeah. He became a self-described friendly nuisance at a bar called the Jury Room, which was a popular hangout for local law enforcement officers.
Self-described friendly nuisance.
Yeah. So basically, he was there all the time.
It's like hepatitis. It's always there lingering. It mightn't always come to the forefront.
There's a book, Whoever Fights Monsters, by Robert K. Wrestler and Tom Schachtman. In that book, they said that one officer gave him a training school badge. So like, you know, the police officer badges, I presume they have ones when they're training. So he got a badge and handcuffs, and another actually let him borrow a gun.
Good job!
And Ed actually even had a car that resembled a police cruiser.
So they basically got him a My First Police kit and let him play with it.
He was basically a police officer cosplayer.
No, definitely. He was cosplaying. Like, yeah. He was cosplaying.
He was like, oh yeah, this is who I am. Like, he bought a special car that even looked like one. Like, you're a fucking loser. Sorry.
Like, that's taking it a bit too far.
You're embarrassing. Do you know what I mean? Come on, like, just get a different job. Go join the army. Like, it's the same thing, like.
And they'd let you shoot people and not get in trouble for it. Not that the police get in trouble for killing people either, like, that's real. But you're given bigger guns to do it.
That is true.
And you become a hero. Or just use your giant bubble butt to your advantage and become the world's best clown. Not like a Gacy, but like, you know, one that people actually like.
Ed worked a series of menial jobs before he got a job with the State of California Division of Highways. Was he highway patrol or something? I don't.
Yeah, like Chips, kind of. But
yeah, so he's one of them lads. Anyways, during this time, his relationship with his mom, you know, was pretty much the same, toxic and hostile, and they apparently were having arguments that the neighbors were able to overhear. So all in all, a healthy relationship. He later described his arguments with his mother, saying, my mother and I started writing on horrendous battles, just horrible battles, violent and vicious. I've never been in such a vicious verbal battle with anyone. I think they were vicious. I think he might have said vicious more than four times. It would go to fists with a man, but this was my mother, and I couldn't stand the thought of my mother and I doing these things. She insisted on it, and just over stupid things. I remember one roof raiser was over whether I should have my teeth clean. So he basically was saying that his mom used to start fights with him and egg him on and dog him into fights. That fights that he would have, if it was another man, that he would have just physically fought and had it over and done with. But with his mom, he couldn't.
Would you, Ed? Because all your victims were women and you have the neck to say that you'd punch a fella, but yet having an argument with a woman, you couldn't punch her, but yet you could take their fucking heads off and fuck the neck hole.
No, that's because he respected his mom.
Do not be giving me lies.
Oh, he's such a... I can't stand him.
Sorry now, is this not a grown-ass, almost 7-foot man who's working? Why is he still living at home with mammy anyway?
Because he's a fucking loser.
Exactly. This is very much your own fucking fault, Ed.
Stand him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my mom is so mean to me. Can't live with her anymore. Then move out, you fucking gimp.
You deserve it. I wouldn't be nice to you either, freak.
No.
When he'd saved enough money, Ed moved out of his mother's house and moved to live with a friend in Alameda, California. But while he was there, he still complained of being unable to get away from his mom because she regularly phoned him and paid him surprise visits.
don't tell her where you live and don't give her your number out. It's very easy.
He often had financial troubles, which resulted in him frequently having to return to his mother's apartment. So he bitched and moaned about her, but then he still wouldn't fucking just strike out on his own like a normal person.
Yeah.
Like, borrow money off her if you're stuck. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know how you could be working full-time, sharing an apartment, and still struggling that bad. Like, you're sharing an apartment. There's no real reason why you can't afford anything.
But then he can't give out then the fact that she's in his life, because obviously she's going to be making, like, a reappearance, because she's quite literally
in his life,
giving him an upkeep. So you can't just take money or offer and leave, or not expect her to pop around
exactly
the ring.
Yeah, exactly.
This sounds an awful lot again like grown ass man doesn't know how to grow up. He was a giant man baby trying to climb back into mammy's womb.
Yeah,
that was it.
What is it with these men that we've covered that all have like severe mammy issues?
Honest to God, womb clingers, all of them.
There's a trend there. Like, I'm not saying, obviously, because lots of mothers are dickheads and their kids are fine. I'm just saying, like, it tends to be a trend that it seems to affect some people.
More so.
Because I feel like they have the potential. I feel like that's the whole thing. Like, nature versus nurture. It's like some people have the potential. Ed was on a beach in Santa Cruz and he met a student from Turlock High School. So she was what, 17? And he was what? Okay, it was in 1973. And he was born in 1948. What's the maths there?
Don't ask me.
He was 25, I think.
Okay, give or take, we'll say maybe.
So that cerebral cortex is well and truly formed. So,
and he's
who he is after this point is who he is.
Yeah, and he met a student who was a high school student. But anyways, he met her on a beach and they got engaged.
Like right there and then on the beach? Or no, later on?
Later on. But that's where they met.
Thank God.
But they got engaged in March of 1973. After everything kind of went down, her family like requested that her name would be revealed to the public, obviously, and the engagement obviously was broken off. But that same year, he was working for the highway patrol and he was hit by a car while riding a motorbike. His arm was badly injured in the crash and he received a $15,000 settlement in the court case.
And you know, if he was any thinner or any smaller, he would have died. His height is to his advantage.
If you adjust that for like inflation to now, it's a lot of money. 90,000 pretty much exactly.
Ooh. Somebody want to hit me with their car?
Run me over. He, with his settlement money, bought a 1969 Ford Galaxy. And one day he was driving around and he noticed that a large number of young women were hitchhiking. After he noticed this, he began storing plastic bags, knives, blankets and handcuffs in the car. So he started testing the waters. He started picking them up and dropping them where they wanted to go and just letting them go. You know, he was sussing it out. Like, he was like, if I pick them up, like, how will I go about doing what I want to do, basically?
Yeah, like, how much will it trust me? Do I give off any bad vibes that they might send?
With what's a good way to go? Like, how, you know, how far can I go? According to Ed, he picked up about 150 of these hitchhikers before he felt any, like, murderous sexual urges. And he called these his little zapples.
What?
Little zapples. And yeah, once he started feeling them, he decided he wanted to act on these zapples. As far as I can imagine, if I was to guess, I would presume that he was getting like butterflies kind of thing. That kind of like excitement.
Yeah, he was going to be excited.
Like electrical, like he was getting like...
No, you agree. I think butterflies is probably the right word.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that little, like the little adrenaline rush you get when you first meet someone you really, really like. Like a good first date kind of thing.
That kind of like he was getting like a buzz.
But rapey and murdery.
Yeah. But in like a, instead of being like, oh, like in a cute way, he was being like, oh my God, like imagine I just like killed her right now. He was like,
I can't wait to take her fucking head off.
Okay, so on the 7th of May in 1972, Ed was driving around Berkeley in California and he picked up two 18-year-old hitchhiking students from Fresno State University, Marianne Pesk and Anita Mary Lucheza, and he picked them up under the assumption that he would be dropping them to Stanford. But after driving around for an hour, he managed to reach a secluded wooded area near Alameda, California, which he was actually familiar with the area because of him being on like highway patrol, basically. He managed to get there without his passengers realizing that he had gone off course. He handcuffed Marianne, and locked Anita into the trunk, like into the boot of the car. While Anita was in the boot, he stabbed and strangled Marianne to death and then killed Anita in pretty much the exact same way. He later said, when he was talking about like what he'd done to them, that when he was handcuffing Marianne, he brushed the back of his hand against one of her breasts and it embarrassed him, and adding that he said apparently when he did that he was like, oh whoops, I'm sorry, or something like that, despite murdering her literally
apologizing
minutes
for
later.
Accidentally fondling your tip or not apologizing for stabbing you.
He literally killed her minutes later and was like apologizing for accidentally touching her boob when he was like handcuffing her. After he killed the two girls, he put their bodies into the trunk of his car and returned to his apartment. He was stopped along the way by a cop for having a broken taillight, but obviously your man never noticed the bodies in the car because they were in the boot. So Ed, his roommate, wasn't at home, so he brought the two girls into the apartment. He took photos of them, had sex with both of their bodies, and then dismembered them. I should have fucking put a trigger warning there like maybe 10 minutes ago. But anyways,
slight necrophilia.
Yeah, just from here on out, like, be aware of the fact that it's going to get a lot worse. He dismembered the two girls and then put their body parts into these plastic bags, which he later abandoned near the Loma Prieta mountain. Before he got rid of their heads into a ravine, like, he was throwing them into, like, I don't know what the word is, like, it's like a small valley, I suppose.
The word is ravine, you just said it.
I know, I don't know why I over-explained that.
Was he so playing like how far can I toss the head or bowling?
Before he threw their heads in, he engaged in irrematio with both of them, which is basically, I don't know how to say it in a nice way.
The neck hole?
No, their mouths.
Or making the head.
That's fellatio, is it
yeah,
not?
Yeah, presuming not. I think it's a more aggressive version. I looked it up and that's what it said, that it's a
So he was basically shoving it in so the head, like, no, it was like literally coming out of the back of their fucking skulls.
Okay, noun. Irrematio noun, active participation in fellatio by the male member, aggressive insertion of the penis into a partner's mouth or throat. So he was, it's like, it's different than like a blowjob because it's much more aggressive. I didn't like saying that. In August of that same year, Mary Ann's skull was found on that mountain. They did like extensive searches, but they couldn't find any of the rest of her body or any trace of Anita. I'm presuming animals and stuff, like, there's no, do you know, they've bobcats and God knows what else, I don't know, out there.
Yeah.
Do you know, there's all sorts of everything in California, like, you've no idea.
Even insects, like, would have mopped it.
Okay, so later on, anyways, on September 14th in 1972, Ed picked up a 15-year-old dance student named Aiko Ku, who had decided to hitchhike to a dance class because she missed her bus. He again drove to a remote area where he pulled a gun on Aiko before he accidentally locked himself out of the car.
Like, only he could do that. Do you know what I mean?
This next part. However, Aiko let him back inside.
Aiko.
He had managed to gain her trust while holding her at gunpoint. And I mean,
how?
Let me not victim blame, but like, I just don't get it. I really don't understand how. Like, one thing I was thinking was that possibly she was thinking, her logic was I'm stuck in this car. I have nowhere to go. Yeah. He's going to get in somehow. I might as well let him in and maybe he won't be as angry.
Yeah, because either that or he was going to break the windows and drag her out and be angry.
Do you know
angry.
What I mean?
So yeah, so I can see from that point.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, there's like the whole, he gained her trust. It sounds like bullshit to me. Like, unless maybe he said like this, I won't be angry. If I have to break these windows, I'm going to be angry. But if you just let me in, I'll be fine. Anyways, she let him back into the car and he choked her unconscious, raped her and killed her. After all that happened, he packed her body into the trunk of his car again, same as the other two girls, and went to a nearby bar to have a few drinks, then drove home to his apartment. Like, he was so arrogant, like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I can't wrap my head around these people that they go, they kill people and they just have the body, whatever, and they're just having like a regular ass day.
Yeah, but
like, how do you do that?
It was like that guy who killed the girl in New Zealand, Grace, I think was her name, and he went, like, she was a Tinder date and he killed her, and then he went on another Tinder date while he had her in a suitcase in his car. Anyways, I just don't know how it happened. You think you'd be kind of even half nervous, but I feel like it's definitely like a power play as well. It's like, nobody knows what's going on, do you know?
Yeah.
Too smart to get caught.
Yeah, nobody
no
knows
worry.
What I'm capable of and I can do it again.
So he later confessed that after he came out, like after he had his few drinks, he came out and opened the boot of his car and was admiring his catch like a fisherman.
God, he's such a fucking fool. Oh, I can't stand him.
When he went back to his apartment anyways, he brought her in and same again, he had sex with her corpse, dismembered her and disposed of her body in pretty much the exact same way as the two previous girls. Her mom, Aiko's mom, called the police to report the disappearance of her daughter and put up hundreds of flyers like asking for information, but she didn't. No information was given because obviously. So then on the 7th of January 1973, Ed had moved back home with his mom and he was driving around the Cabrillo College campus when he picked up 18-year-old Cynthia Ann Shawl, and her friends called her Cindy. She was hitchhiking again, so he picked her up and drove to a wooded area and fatally shot her with a 22 caliber pistol. He put her body into the boot of the car and then drove back to his mom's house, and he kept her body in his bedroom closet in his room overnight.
Same one that she had found the cat bits in before, and he thinks that's a great place to put a body.
A whole would assume, body. That's I feel like they've moved huge. House since, like that was his kid, like childhood home house. Like I feel like she's been living in apartments and rent.
No, but not even the fact that it's like not even the same closet. The fact that he still tried to hide it in a closet when that's where he had hid shit before and got found.
Yeah, different furniture, same bullshit. Like it doesn't, you know, make it any better.
He's basically, yeah, he's repeating the same behaviors he has his whole life. Like there's no development there whatsoever. Anyways, so when Clarnell left for work the next morning, he had sex with Cindy's body, removed the bullet from her corpse, obviously covering his track. So the IQ kind of kicked in there a small bit.
It was DNA, I think, because spunking in a dead body. Ooh, but yet you want to remove a bullet hole.
I presume he was thinking they wouldn't be found on time for DNA to be kind of, you know,
in any way admissible. Yeah, yeah, I think so too.
But then he dismembered and decapitated her in his mother's bathtub. He kept her head for several days doing the whole like irrumatio thing, and buried her head after he was done with it. He buried it in his mother's garden, facing upwards towards her bedroom. And when he explained why he buried her like that, he said his mother always wanted people to look up to her.
Severed heads included.
Severed heads buried in my garden included. Then discarded the rest of like Cindy's remains. He threw them off a cliff. Over the course of like the following few weeks, everything except for her head and her right hand were discovered and pieced together like a macabre jigsaw puzzle, is a quote.
I don't like that the right hand is missing.
Yeah, and like,
oh my god, I didn't even think of that. I just presumed it got lost at sea.
A Willy Warmer. That's exactly what he's using it for.
That is, I actually didn't even think of that.
I could be wrong, but no. In the grand scheme of Ed Kemper,
it makes way too much sense.
There's no other reason as to why.
A pathologist examined her body and said that she had been dismembered with a power saw. On the 5th of February 1973, Ed had a big argument with his mom. Yet again, arguing with her. And he left the house in search of possible victims. There was, apparently, at this time now, there was like, people were kind of starting to get suspicious because there were so many young girls going missing. People were starting to think that there was a serial killer preying on hitchhikers in the Santa Cruz area. So students were advised to only accept rides from cars with university stickers on them. Mm. Ed had a sticker.
Of course he did.
Don't feel like it's hard to get your fucking hands on a university sticker. Like that.
It's not. Like, his mom worked at the University of California in Santa Cruz, so he got one from her. He ran into Rosalind Heather Thorpe, who was 23, and Alice Helen Liu, who was 20, on the UCSC campus. According to Ed, he said that Rosalind, she got into his car first. Alice was hesitant. She said that, like, Alice didn't want to get into the car, but Rosalind convinced her to get in. So, anyways, same situation again. He shot them with his 22 caliber pistol and wrapped their bodies in blankets. He brought their bodies back to his mother's house, but this time he beheaded them in the car and carried their headless bodies into his mother's house to have sex with them. I don't know.
Jeez.
Like,
maybe because there was two of them then, and I don't know, maybe he was just like, oh, it was too much.
He seemed to have
time, so
like a big thing.
All he wanted was the hand and the head.
All he wanted was the body for that specific thing and then the head for that specific thing, and that's all he wanted. Mm. He didn't care if they were together, they could still do the same thing separately. Gross as that fucking is. So after he had finished with what he wanted to do with them, he dismembered the bodies, removed the bullets, and the next morning he discarded the remains. Some of the bodies, like bits of both bodies, were found at Eden Canyon a week later, and more were found near Highway 1 in March. He was spreading them like God fucking knows. Yeah. Like, when he was asked in an interview as to why he decapitated his victims, he said, "The head trip fantasies were a bit like a trophy. You know, the head is where everything is at, the brain, the mouth, the eyes. That's the person. I remember being told as a kid that if you cut off the head, the body dies. The body is nothing after the head is cut off. Well, that's not quite true. There's a lot left in the girl's body without the head."
Ew. Oh,
so fucking gross.
On the 20th of April in 1973, Clarnell came home from a party. She woke up Ed when she came in. I'm presuming she was probably noisy and fucking banging around in the kitchen like every drunk person ever. So she went into bed and she was reading a book, and Ed came into her room and she said, "I suppose you're going to want to sit up all night and talk now." And Ed was like, "No, good night." So he waited around and she fell asleep. Then he came back into her bedroom and beat her to death with a claw hammer and then slit her throat with a knife.
I mean, Ed, she was probably dead from the claw hammer.
Then he decapitated her and irrumatio shit again with his mom's fucking... So after he finished with that situation, he put it up on like a... He stood it up on like the mantelpiece and used it as a dartboard. Ed stated that he put her head in a shelf and screamed at it for an hour, threw darts at it, and ultimately smashed her face in. After that, he also cut out her tongue and her larynx, so her voice box, and put them in the garbage disposal, which definitely was a metaphor for the whole thing of like the voice box and the tongue. Like, that's what you talk, and it's definitely I'm finally shutting you up.
He was finally silencing her. Yeah, exactly.
However, all that down the garbage disposal, but the garbage disposal wasn't able to break down the vocal cords and spat the tissue back into the sink. Ed said that seemed appropriate, as much as she'd bitched and screamed and yelled at me over so many years. Ed put Clarnell's body into a closet and went for a drink at a nearby bar. When he got back home, he rang his mom's best friend, Sarah Taylor, but her nickname was Sally. Anyways, he invited her to come over to the house and watch a movie. And he said that they'd have dinner together and, you know, whatever. I don't really understand that. Maybe, like, he said that he was ringing on behalf of his mom or...
His mom, yeah.
Or something. I just thought it was very weird. But anyway, I digress. Sally arrived and Ed strangled her to death to create a cover story that he would be able to say that his mom and Sally had gone away on vacation together. So, I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense, but like...
Yeah, that doesn't work for, like, a long time, a long though. Period, like, that's
Like, it would have made more sense in there. She was to say, oh yeah, well, mom's actually been seeing this new man for ages, and I think she finally found someone she likes. She's gone off with him.
But no, he put Sally's body into a closet, kind of hid any signs of a disturbance, and left a note for the police that said, approximately 5:15 a.m. on Saturday, no need for her to suffer anymore at the hands of this horrible, murderous butcher. It was quick, asleep the way I wanted it, not sloppy and incomplete, gents. Just a lack of time. I got things to do.
He wasn't, because it's not like he suffocated her or anything like that. You tore her head open with a fucking claw hammer before you slit her throat. So there's nothing peaceful.
I mean, it was probably quick. Quiet for him because she wasn't talking when he did it. Like, I feel like you'd be dead straight away from one fucking hit of a hammer.
The whack of that hitting your head, like, that's going to jolt a person up. Like, you're not.
No, it won't
to,
if it's fucking your head is respond. Caved in straight away. A 6'9" man hitting you in the head with a hammer, you're dead straight away. And then everything else is just an excess.
If she wasn't dead, she was definitely knocked. Like,
he killed her instantaneously. He just bit her until he was happy with how much.
No, I know that. But then, like, I just genuinely would love to know, if you get a claw like that in the head straight away, is that it?
Yeah.
You're done. 100%. That's what you see in a film, but is that what it's like in real life?
Skull would...
Like, did your body not go to react?
No.
Like, if he would have hit her with one blow, did that kill her? Or was it...
It would have to. Like, I'm saying, like, he's a big man and he would have hit her with a lot of force.
Oh, yeah, I know that. But still, like, there has to be some...
It'd punch a hole into your head, like... As grim as that is.
If it wasn't enough to kill her right out, then it definitely would have, like...
She wouldn't have been able...
Knocked her unconscious, even though she was already asleep. But you know what I mean? She wouldn't have been able to wake up anymore after that one first whack. Definitely. But the thing about it, I don't know, maybe you don't feel the same about it as I do, but the fact that he waited for her to fall asleep shows how much of a pussy he actually was towards his mother, that he was too afraid to kill her while she was away.
But he was, like, just in general anyway, because, like, that, all you have to do is look... That his victims, like, either kids or women that he towered over.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
He never went for, like, a 6 foot, just... even one or two man. Like, he definitely enjoyed the fact he was stronger than everyone.
Yeah, 100%. Like, it just showed that one in particular. Like, obviously, yeah, we knew it from the other victims, but with his mother alone, he couldn't even face her at that point to kill her. Like, he couldn't face her to murder her. He had to do it while she was asleep. Nothing about wanting it to be peaceful.
I think it was...
He didn't have the balls.
And as well, like, no need for her to suffer anymore at the hands of this horrible, murderous butcher. I feel like that was, like, kind of sarcasm, that he was like, oh, you know, like, I did her... Like, that she was probably always saying that she was sick of being around him, that she was, you know, that he was like, I finally ended her suffering because... But he doesn't think that he was causing her any suffering, if that makes any sense. I don't know how I'm trying to describe it. Ed, once he was done, you know, he wrote the note, blah, blah, blah. He fled the scene. He drove nonstop to Pueblo in Colorado, which Colorado is a good fucking drive. Like, he took caffeine pills while he was driving because he needed to stay awake for the 1,000 mile journey. Like, what's that 1,000 miles? How far is that? He brought with him, he had 3 guns and hundreds of rounds of ammunition in the car. And he believed while he was on the drive that he was the target of an active manhunt. And he had the radio on constantly to see would there be news of his mother and Sally, so that he'd know straight away as soon as, like, it was hitting the airwaves. But no one was fucking talking about it because nobody knew they were dead, because obviously he hid their bodies. Nobody would even think to look for dead bodies where there was no people thought to be dead, do you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So on April 23rd, he got fed up with waiting and he rang the Santa Cruz police to confess his crimes. And if you remember, the Santa Cruz police were the ones that he was friends with.
Yeah, he'd go like to drinking bars and stuff like that.
They basically didn't believe him and they didn't take his call seriously and told him to call back again later. But Ed was persistent and a few hours later he called back again. He's such a fucking loser. Like, I can't stand him. Guys, excuse me.
He needed the acknowledgement. Yeah. 100%.
He's embarrassing. I really can't stand him.
And just to quickly answer your question, it is 1,600 kilometers and it would take 12 to 15 hours to drive it.
That's a long way, like. 12 to 15 hours, Jesus. Like, and he probably didn't even stop or anything because he was afraid of being caught. That he thought he was like, that there was a manhunt out for him.
Yeah. Which is another, like,
so embarrassing. It's such like the ego thing.
Flawed logic.
Such an ego thing of like, they're looking for me. Like, no, they're not. Nobody.
You left straight a fucking way. What makes you think they're looking for you when you said they've gone on a holiday? That might take 5 to 14 days max.
Yeah, literally.
And then, like, you're okay, yeah, he drove that 15 hours straight, no sleep, no breaks, whatever, not to get caught, just to go and ring the police because he was pissed off that he wasn't getting caught.
Like, he was so scared of getting caught, he drove 1,000 miles. And then when he got there, he was mad that nobody knew that he'd done what he did. Anyways, after the few hours had passed, he called back again and asked to speak to a police officer that he knew, like, personally. So when he spoke to him, he confessed to killing his mam and Sally and obviously said where he was. And he waited there for them to arrive and take him into custody. And after he'd been taken in, he confessed to the murders of the 6 students. During, obviously, all these interrogations, gave them all the evidence they'd need to basically prove that he was... You know, basically,
he's the co-ed killer.
When he was asked in a later interview why he turned himself in, Ed said, "The original purpose was gone. It wasn't serving any physical or real or emotional purpose. It was all just a pure waste of time. Emotionally, I couldn't handle it much longer. Toward the end there, I started feeling the folly of the whole damn thing. And at the point of near exhaustion, near collapse, I just said, to hell with it, and called it all off." He said in interviews that he often searched for victims after having bad arguments with his mam. That apparently she actually refused to introduce him to women that were going to the university that she worked at. Saying that she would be like, "Oh, you're just like your father. You don't deserve to get to know them." So
she wasn't wrong.
He was not wrong. But psychiatrists and Ed both have... You know, they've all said that the young women were basically surrogates for the main target, who was his mam, until he basically got the courage up to actually do it properly.
Or the opportunity when she was passed out.
Yeah. So on May 7th in 1973, he was indicted on 8 counts of first degree murder. May 7th, that's a date that popped up before.
It was.
That was, the Marianne and Anita. They were the first girls. The first girls kissed. First girls he killed.
Well, he did things to their bodies. So.
No, I did not.
Might actually be true, don't know.
Yeah, so he basically, he was indicted on 8 counts of murder on the same day as the 2 girls he killed, like the first 2 girls he killed, like just a year later. He was assigned, like, his lawyer, Jim Jackson. But Jim Jackson had a terrible job in trying to defend Ed because he obviously had made a huge, like, very graphic and detailed confession. So basically their only option was to plead not guilty by reason of insanity.
Yeah.
So while Ed was in custody, he tried to commit suicide twice, but obviously failed, and his trial went ahead on October 23rd in 1973. Ed obviously had to be tested, like, mental, you know, about his mental health to see, was he actually insane? And 3 court-appointed psychiatrists said that he was legally sane. Dr. Joel Fort investigated his juvenile records and the diagnosis that he was once psychotic. He also interviewed Ed. He actually used truth serum to interview him a couple of times.
Oh yeah, that's
actually which I thought was interesting.
Thought that was inadmissible in court. It probably is. It's not like 100% reliable.
The same way though as a lie detector test is, but it's still used.
It's like, you know? it's used as maybe
a little bit of a help.
Highlight, a little like bit of seasoning. When he interviewed Ed, apparently Ed actually said that he had engaged in cannibalism, that he'd eaten some parts of some of the people. He said that he sliced flesh from the legs of his victims, then cooked and ate these strips in a casserole.
Did he though, or is he just trying to make himself seem more insane so he gets sent to a psychiatric ward and not?
He recanted the confession later, but it was a confession he made, but it's, you know, it was recanted. That doesn't really mean anything either. It doesn't really mean anything in general. It doesn't matter. So anyways, Dr. Fort decided that Ed was fully 100% aware and able to know that what he was doing was wrong in each case, that there was no disconnect with anything, that he actually really enjoyed the prospect of the infamy associated with being a murderer. But he took back the confession of cannibalism, I presume, because he probably doesn't like the idea of it. If he did, he probably doesn't like the idea that he did, if that makes sense. That it's like, it doesn't look good.
But necrophilia is...
I don't know, I feel like there's weird little, like, standards.
If anything, I think cannibalism is a lot more respectable than necrophilia. That would just be, that would be my opinion. I feel like it's gross.
I mean, I feel like it's everybody's opinion, but maybe Ed had a different one. I don't know, I'm just saying, like, it's a possibility that he just was kind of, like, didn't want to say that he had done it for whatever reason. I don't know. California used a system called the Menacton system. It was, like, it's a standard, basically, to decide whether or not someone is insane. Basically, Ed knew what he was doing, that he knew what he was doing was wrong, and he had shown signs of malicious aforethought, so he had planned ahead. He was bad minded and he did what he wanted and he knew what he was doing, basically. So he's not insane. So on the 1st of November, Ed took the stand. He testified that he could kill the victims because he wanted them for myself, like possessions, and he attempted to convince the jury that he was insane based on the reasoning that his actions could only have been committed by someone with an aberrant mind. He said two beings inhabited his body and that when the killer personality took over, it was kind of like blacking out. And
okay, Jacqueline fucking Hyde, calm down.
It was kind of like blacking out, but yet you remember every single detail of what you did and where you
That's
left
not
them.
Dissociating at
no,
all.
No, it's like, you know when people say that they get really angry and that they like they kind of forget what they've done. I feel like he was just flying into a rage and that he was acting like nearly purely on instinct. Like, he planned ahead and he knew what he wanted to do, but I'd say for the actual action, maybe he was just, the adrenaline was...
No, sorry, I don't buy
no,
it.
No, I'm not saying...
Bullshit. Blind rage is literal blind rage. Like, you don't remember what you do in a blind rage when you come back out of it, and then it's not something that you want to repeat when you do recover from something like that. So I don't buy it at all. He is bullshitting entirely. Yeah.
And the fact that
he knew what he
was
doing.
Like two people nearly in his own head, you know,
he's
what
a
I mean
cop out. Yeah,
yeah,
it's exactly that, it's a cop out, it's bullshit. He was calm, I'm sure, when he killed those
and it's
people.
Obvious like that, like someone who kills people the way he did obviously has something fucking wrong with them. You still knew what you were, like, the whole point of being insane is that you don't know what you're doing, rather than,
and it's not being able
exactly.
to differentiate between right and wrong, which he fucking knew what he was doing was wrong.
Just because there's something wrong with you doesn't mean you're insane.
Yeah,
no, it just means that you're fucking, you're fucked up, but it doesn't mean, like, you still deserve to be punished for what you did.
Precisely.
On the 8th of November, so basically a week after he testified, the 6-man, 6-woman jury, they deliberated for 5 hours before declaring that Ed was sane and guilty on all counts. He asked for the death penalty and specifically requested death by torture.
Oh, I thought he was going to say electric chair, taking him back to the good old days.
I can't stand him. And that's actually, that's something that actually made me think of it like much differently, that I feel like he definitely was one of those people that gets like a lot of pleasure out of physical pain. Like, who requests death by torture? Nobody wants that.
But no, he's intelligent. He fucking knows that that's not going to happen. I guarantee he's taking pleasure out in watching other people squirm at his request. Like, how demented is this man? So that's what he took pleasure in. People think of that.
That's true,
so
actually.
He's this big bad monster. Like, he knew full well.
It was literally the theatrics of it all and nothing more.
Okay, fair enough. That's true. Before this, do you remember how Ed was in like the jail? After he was sentenced, before he was taken off to jail, Ed slowly removed the precious commerce pin from the label of his buckskin jacket. The man who was there when he did it described the episode as a scene that would wrench the heart of any B-grade movie fan. Quotes are saying, Ed looked at it for a long time and tears came to his eyes. Then he handed it to me and said, here, I want you to have it.
Do you know what it is? It's like, do you know when Tony Stark gets rid of his heart, you know, and he like puts it in and like just lets it float? That's exactly what the fuck it's like.
Nobody fucking cares about your little junior commerce pin that you got when you were in mental asylum.
Exactly, except Tony was giving up Iron Man, an actual superhero, and Ed was giving up something he bullshitted his way into.
That he hasn't been a part of since he was like 15.
It's referred to dramatics.
That was when he was 15. Like, what age is he now? He's like 30. Get over yourself.
Liz, when you finally snap and become a serial killer, will you please float your John Paul II
Why
award
did
into
I
the ocean?
I was literally going to say, that's like me with the John Paul Award because I had to scheme for it.
Exactly. It's the fucking exact same. Finish this. Come on, before I finish myself, please.
So anyways, obviously after he requested his fucking death by torture, they were like, no. He instead received 7 years to life for each count, with these terms to be served concurrently. Was sentenced to the California Medical Facility. While he was there, he was incarcerated in the same prison block as other criminals like Herbert Mullins and Charles Manson. Ed showed particular disdain for Herbert, who committed his murders at the same time and in the same areas as Ed. He described Herbert as just a cold-blooded killer, killing everybody he saw for no good reason.
What did you do?
Sorry. I never thought I'd see the day that I have to defend Herb Mullins. But Herb had the voice of all of his family members in his head telling him that if you don't kill these, the world is going to be like ended in an apocalypse. He was literally trying to save the world in his own schizophrenic way.
He was paranoid schizophrenic that had a bad thing with acid. Not someone with like a very much high IQ and mommy issues. You're not the same. And you are indeed worse.
And he went to prison fully convinced that he had succeeded in his mission. So no, Ed, you're the one who killed for no reason, you mommy issue motherfucker. Herb had a mission. It was wrong, but he had a mission.
Ed obviously took a dislike to Herbert. And he physically intimidated him because Herbert was only 5'7", and he also manipulated him like really badly. Ed said that Herbert had a bad habit of singing and bothering people when someone tried to watch TV, so I threw water on him to shut him up. Then when he was a good boy, I'd give him peanuts. Herbie liked peanuts. That was effective because pretty soon he asked permission to sing. That's called behavior modification treatment.
That's trying to train somebody like a fucking cat. That's exactly,
you know,
that what that is.
You ever watch Big Bang Theory? You know,
no. Yeah, when Sheldon Pavlov's fucking Shelly. Yeah. Penny, who the fuck is Shelly?
Every time she like does something good, he gives her chocolates and he basically trains her to be like the person he wants her to be.
Yeah. He Pavloved him, which is a terrible thing to do to somebody. It's fun, but it's terrible.
Fucking Herbie liked peanuts. Like
Herbie liked peanuts. What a...
Anyways, Ed is still, he's among the general population in prison and is considered a model prisoner. He was in charge of scheduling other inmates' appointments with psychiatrists and was an accomplished craftsman of ceramic cups. He was also a prolific reader of audiobooks for the blind. A 1987 Los Angeles Times article said that he was the coordinator of the prison's program and had personally spent over 5,000 hours narrating books with several hundred completed recordings to his name. He retired from these positions in 2015 after he experienced a stroke and was declared medically disabled. He actually received his first rules violation report in prison in 2016 because he failed to provide a urine sample.
Drugs.
While he was in prison, he has participated in a number of interviews, including a segment in the documentary The Killing of America, as well as an appearance in the documentary Murder, No Apparent Motive. His interviews have contributed to the understanding of the mind of serial killers, and John Douglas is an FBI profiler and he described Ed as among the brightest prison inmates interviewed and capable of rare insight for a violent criminal. Ed is like, he's very open and honest about the nature of his crimes and has said that he participated in the interviews to save others like him from killing. At the end of his Murder No Apparent Motive interview, he said, "There's somebody out there that is watching this and hasn't done that, hasn't killed people and wants to, rages inside and struggles with that feeling or is so sure that they have it under control. They need to talk to somebody about it. Trust somebody enough to sit down and talk about something that isn't a crime. Thinking that way isn't a crime. Doing it isn't just a crime. It's a horrible thing. It doesn't know when to quit and it can't be stopped easily once it starts.
Can with a bullet, that's all I want to say."
He has been eligible for parole like multiple times over the years. So the first time was 1987, but he was denied parole that year. And then in 1980, 81 and 82, he was denied. He waived his right to a hearing in 1985. He was denied parole in 1988 and he said, "Society is not ready in any shape or form for me. I can't fault them for that." So basically up until now, he has waived his right to a hearing multiple times, but he's also been denied parole multiple times.
Oh, he's never getting out there. They know that.
He's next eligible in 2024. We shall see.
At the rate shit's going from the 2020s. Ed Kemper is getting released in 24. Wait, just wait.
She always goes down in season 4. Always.
Oh my god, that's so
true. No matter what series you look at.
If you're telling me this is the plan for season 1, I'm not a fan. 0 out of 10 on Rotten Tomatoes, to be honest. Alrighty, so that was Ed Kemper, I guess.
I don't really know what to say about him. Like, I just can't stand the fucking side of him. He's a really a bad fool. He's like a really embarrassing person.
Do you know what? He'd be the type of person like that would be very, very heavily involved in D&D. Not that I'm judging anybody that plays D&D, because I'm absolutely not. But you're the people that like die by the letter of the fucking law by it and will dress up as a grand wizard and nearly hiss at people if they do something slightly out of turn.
Well, I think, like we said, he was a big loser. He shouldn't have needed his mummy to introduce him to university students in the first place. He should have moved out on his own and gotten away from her. You can leave the country, Ed. It's not that fucking hard. And I don't believe that he reformed himself in prison at all.
Absolutely not. He was just hoping to pull the same trick that he did when he was a kid, because it worked when he was a mere child. So it's going to work when he's an adult and has like experience.
Precisely. Exactly that. And it's bringing him extra fame as well, because yes, he is the serial killer that kind of helped develop profiling and everything. He's the one that everyone turned
to ask questions about.
Because he couldn't keep his fucking gum shut.
Exactly. He was willing to talk and everyone loved him for it. And oh yes, I am Ed Kemper. I am so famous. I am the best serial killer. And that's exactly why he hated Herbert Mullins. Not because he was singing. Just because he was killing at the same time as him, so it wasn't all about him.
Exactly.
He is the worst of the Eds, in my opinion.
I think so too. Well,
Edwards wasn't much better.
No. But at least he wasn't a necrophile, so I'll take that for the win.
Exactly. Yeah, there was no necrophilia with you. No necrophilia that we're aware of with Geeny.
Geeny Bobini.
I'm voting Kemper, the worst of the Eds.
He's 100%. Definitely like the most annoying and just frustrating one. Like that just doesn't, nothing makes sense. Like, I feel like Ed...
Because he was a little bitch about it, though, at the same time.
I feel like Ed Gein, I don't know, you could nearly have a...
Ed number one, king of the Eds.
I feel like, I know this sounds stupid, but I feel like you'd nearly have a small bit more sympathy for him than you would for the others.
Yeah, for sure.
That you feel
like...
Because
he was definitely mentally ill. Like.
Yeah, like, you feel like he really, like, if he'd been given a fair shot, I feel like he wouldn't have been who he became.
Right, so I think we can all agree then that in the list of Eds, we have Ed Gein, king of the Eds, followed by Edward Edwards, still a dick, but not as bad. And Ed Kemper, worst of the worst.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
A, like, easy decision.
Perfect. Well, that is the best way I can think of to wrap up the Ed, Ed and Eddie series. We hope everyone listening enjoyed it. And we will be returning in 1 week with another Heavy Hitter series. But we're not going to tell you about that yet, because then you won't come back. So we'll bring you back for that at a later time. Do we have any other news, any updates, anything?
Not for me. No.
Oh, well then in that case, I think it's just about time to wrap this shit up. In the meantime, I would like to add positive vibes and negative tests, because it is Corona time. But other than that, always be a hypocrite.
Don't forget to tense your ankles.
And join our cult. Two little tits. Get down tonight. Wait, did you hear me starting to sing that and then you sing it? Okay, I was like, oh my god, did we just psychically match it again?
Hold me closer, tiny bladder. Count the piss stains on the toilet. Lay me down with toilet paper.